It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so we woefully skipped something last week, and I don't even want to risk it happening again, so we're just going to do it right now. Last week, it turned out both of us had seen the new Mortal Kombat movie. Neither of us mentioned it. I forgot, and you suck. I don't know. But I forgot. So we should talk about it now.
Okay.
What'd you think?
I mean, I think it was what it promised to be. There was a weird... there was a weird thing omitted from it, plot-wise.
There was also a weird thing added to it, plot-wise.
Yeah, that's true.
yeah.
But other than those things, it was like, yeah, this is pretty much, I mean, what they promised, it seemed to me.
The hero of this Mortal Kombat movie was a character that was wholly made up for this movie.
Yeah.
And there's no point to that because there are so many Mortal Kombat characters. Like, pick one, make them the hero. It's crazy. But that's what they did. I had heard most people didn't like it and thought it was boring. I liked it fine. I mean, again, it's a Mortal Kombat movie. There's only so much, like, people who say it sucks, I'm like, talk me through a truly great Mortal Kombat movie and what that has. And I think there is an argument to be made. It was not, some people would want out of a Mortal Kombat movie super cool, exciting fight scenes. And these were not bad fight scenes, but like, they weren't like, remember when you talked about Kong versus Godzilla and you're like, this movie sucks, except the fight scenes, which are amazing.
Yeah.
Like, these did not stand out like that. I also wasn't disappointed by them. They were better than a lot of the ones in the first Mortal Kombat and pretty much all of the ones in the second Mortal Kombat. So, I mean, I guess that could be a thing. But otherwise, I mean, it is what it is. And I wasn't bored.
No, I wasn't either. I mean, it was fine. It's not really my kind of thing. Abby wanted to see it because not that she's a huge Mortal Kombat fan, but there was probably an angle of, you know, she's a gamer. So she, even if it's a game that she doesn't like or kind of like, she doesn't really like fighting games at all. But I think she likes the idea of movies being made from games and for those movies to be successful, you know. And plus she likes cheesy and or bad movies anyway.
Yeah.
So it was kind of her thing to watch but it didn't, like, it was fine. It was gross, but it was, you know.
Yeah, they definitely went with the full-on violence. I don't know. I don't think of myself as a big Mortal Kombat fan initially. Like, I think I've played a video game of it once or twice ever. I have read up on it because I always like the lore about that stuff. But I guess I'm a fan of the original movie, which I thought we all were. But apparently in the last decade or so, I'm the only one left. Because everybody I know loves to talk about how shit it was. I'm like, you kidding me? I mean, it wasn't good, but it was awesome, and it still holds up. It's awesome.
Never even seen it.
The sequel is dog shit, but dog shit that you can definitely make fun of. And so I think there's some of that for me. And yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it. But it is funny because they made those movies PG-13, the famously violent video game series, and they made the movies PG-13. This time, they did not shy away from the violence.
There was a video game that was a Mortal Kombat DC crossover.
Injustice.
Yeah, we had, well, no, it was something
else. Or is Injustice 2,
I think. No, Injustice is another thing altogether.
Oh, damn. Okay.
This was some kind of Mortal Kombat DC crossover.
Injustice was DC versus the Ghostbusters.
No, it was just DC versus. And we had that game, the Mortal Kombat DC crossover, and we played it like a couple times, which is weird. Because
it actually had continuity. Like,
yeah, there's a story.
Technically, the Mortal Kombat lore, that game actually fits within it. But yeah, that is a thing, too. The Mortal Kombat lore is ridiculous. They have done, I tried to read it one time, and they have done so many iterations of actually it was all a trick, and there's bigger bads and bigger bads. And then we've reset timelines like 12 different times. Like people have switched sides every other game. Like you cannot make sense of that, which again speaks to what do you want out of your Mortal Kombat movie? Because I mean, statistically speaking, they could tell literally any story, and it was probably true for one version of Mortal Kombat.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, the game, fighting games isn't really our thing. Well, I mean, the kids were here and they liked them, fighting mm-hmm. games. So I guess we did have one or two, but that they would play. But this one, like, I never played it myself, but I watched other people play it, and the story was actually kind of interesting what they did with it. So, you know, so we do have a little direct connection to the Mortal Kombat universe, I guess, but mostly just through that game. But I think a lot of the people that didn't like the movie were like hardcore fans that wanted to see something very specific. Like,
but I don't know what that is. Like, I really want.
Well,
no, the people I've heard who didn't like it just said it was boring. And I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, I guess I didn't either.
But yeah, I want to see what a hardcore Mortal Kombat fan thinks a really good Mortal Kombat movie looks like.
Well, I mean, I could mention a couple things I've heard, but I don't want to, it's spoilery, so I don't want to say.
Okay.
But I don't think they're very substantial, because I think you're right. I haven't heard really this overwhelming like pitch that's like, oh my gosh, you're right, they should have done that. I mean, it was.
Traditionally, there are two characters in the series that are very well known that oppose each other. One is called Scorpion and one is called Sub-Zero, and they look exactly the same, but they're different colors. And they have a whole history in the video games. And one of the major complaints about the original 90s versions was that they just had sort of cameos and they didn't really matter. And so this game was really big to make sure they got their deal, and they did get their deal. And I was like, oh, okay. But I mean, like, I wasn't like, thank God, or like, this is such a better story than other Mortal Kombat. No, I'm like, oh, all right. I mean, I got the sense that's what, how it kind of worked, but okay.
Well, I have to say, when the movie started and they were showing all the stuff you're talking about, I remember thinking, everything about this, from the act to the cinematography to the set design, seems to be way better than a film like this deserves. And I thought, if the rest of the film is like this, that'd be pretty cool. But it wasn't, you know.
No.
The first part of it was pretty amazing, and then yes, after that it was kind of a different thing.
And the first part of it is the part that they put out for free on YouTube like a week before it came out. Like, that
maybe
very intentional bait and switch bullshit there. And I will say that.
Well, maybe that's what makes people mad, is that, you know.
But I mean, the beginning is also not the story of Mortal Kombat at all. It is a little story within a story. about two characters. Like, if it's a Mortal Kombat movie, it's about people kung fu fighting between different dimensions to win other dimensions and hijinks. like there are certain aspects of that thing that are there that in my mind preclude it from being a really great movie because it's ridiculous.
You know what's
is fine, but
what's interesting about this to me personally is at some point when I was a kid and I was, you know, watching the news and I was learning about current events and about, you know, geopolitical stuff like kids eventually learn, not knowing anything still, even after all these years after I've learned even more. But anyway, when I was a kid and I'm learning about this stuff, I remember thinking, you know, instead of like fighting these big expensive wars where people die or whatever, they should just have like some, you know, because I think the Olympics, you know, I was one of the Olympics had happened that at whatever, you know what it's like, the Olympics happens and the first time it's happened that you're really noticing it and you're aware of it, right? It's like, oh, this is a cool thing.
I mean, vaguely, it was still sports, but yeah.
Well, but anyway, so the
Olympics, I think the first time I was invested was when I could win free food at McDonald's from it. So.
Okay, well, anyway, whatever Olympiad it was where I was like finally noticing it and understanding what it was, and I think I watched the opening ceremonies or something, and I got a good sense of, oh, you know, all these countries are coming together, and then this is like a really cool, you know, people talk about these things like it's sort of a watershed moment in the world where all these countries, some of them who don't usually get along, are together and they're cooperating, and the athletes are together on the field and they're friendly towards one another. You know, it's supposed to be kind of a picture of what kind of world we could have, you know, where everyone's competing in a
running
way
and jumping.
But I was, you know, I was affected by that. And I thought, why couldn't instead of fighting wars, we just have some tournament, you know, where people compete against one another. And then whoever wins, well, we'll just go with whatever that, you know, we'll just, that'll decide the controversy or whatever, which is of course a stupid idea. But then when Mortal Kombat came along for a long time, then eventually
you were like,
someone,
oh, they're answering me.
Yeah. This was my idea. And it's even dumber than I thought. I mean, I'd figured out it was a dumb idea by then, but when I was a kid, I thought it was a pretty cool idea, which,
no,
you know,
and
if,
it's not
a video game. It did at just the right time. I might have thought it was cool.
I don't think it's a bad idea, and you see it. It's another one of these many things that's an issue of scale. Small tribe versus small tribe, you can do this shit. But when you're dealing with scales of millions of people in countries, their leaders, I mean, ostensibly, if they're a good leader, I suppose, will do anything it takes for the safety and well-being of their people, which means if losing a contest means their people are fucked over and they lose a contest, it's not going to take too long for somebody to be like, well, I'm still not going to let that happen.
Right.
I know we didn't long jump as far as you, but you still don't get to like kick all of those people out of their homes and force them to be refugees.
I have a gun.
And then it goes from there.
Yeah,
but on a smaller scale, if
it's a matter
you've got
of stakes,
a group
a matter
that all
stakes.
Can handle that, you can do that. But yeah, once you get to that point, it's crazy.
It's a matter of stakes, right? I mean, like you're saying, if the groups are small, the consequences of losing is probably not that great, you know. So
or,
it's like, okay,
or if
you
the,
won.
Yeah, or if the discrepancy is, what do we call this valley? Like, you know what? I'm
willing to
risk that on a 100 meter dash, you know. That's okay.
Well, or even if it's something like, which one of us says yay or nay to who gets to use this, right? When you're reasonably certain that is, they're not going to be a jerk about it, but
yeah.
You still, if it's between the two of you, you still want it to be you and not them. And yeah, you know, they win, so they get to say, but then they're going to be nice about it anyway, so it doesn't matter. But like you said, when you get on a certain scale, you know, suddenly people are jerks about things all the time. For
and it was so it's the true answer came up in Star Trek, which is you essentially do an elaborate video game and then just put your people in these disintegrating tubes for the casualties. And then it spares you all the destruction and suffering and everything like that. The problem with that model is a perfect society model for dealing with war. The problem with that is eventually some asshole with a starship shows up and breaks all your machines. And because he thinks you should have to punch and kick. And then that ruins everything. So again, it's an issue of scale. Fuck that guy. I don't even remember what his name was. Kirok or something. I can't. Something like that.
Yeah, we're stupid.
Hello, everyone. That's the new tagline for Fallout. War. War is stupid. Somebody get Ron Perlman on the phone. We're doing the voiceovers for Fallout 5. Can't wait for that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that actually refused Elon Musk's personal request to guest host. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 529.
There's a YouTube channel that Trish and I watch, and I won't tell you which one because I'm about to talk bad about it. It's a weblog kind of thing or whatever, and we watch it. It's fun or whatever. Over time, we're like, we might be getting tired of this. Like, the people involved are just a little annoying and like not quite as like the joke has worn thin, and we're not sure. We're still watching it now, but like we bitch about it a lot more when we watch it. And I was watching something. We were watching an episode of the two people involved were just having a great time and cracking up at everything, which is always good to see. But like, they were just so in their own little world and like it meant nothing to me. And I was just like, move on. And I turned to Trish and I said, is this what it's like when people who don't like my podcast watch my podcast? And she had no answer to that because I don't know who those people are. Why are you watching if you don't like it?
Yeah, right.
I should explain it though. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Little notes, topics, questions, comments, things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails and little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's people's, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. Except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. I'm getting something weird because I was on way before you were because I just decided to read. And so I just hooked everything up and waited for you. And there was a sound like of somebody like just turning on a mic or something. And it would happen frequently. I don't know what the crap that's about. I've made sure there's nothing around the area where the mic is on this. So I don't know what that is. But I just think I heard it again. But luckily, I'm loud enough. I don't think it'll be an issue for anybody. How was your week?
Oh, let's see. I don't think it's been busy. I've got a writing project that I'm really trying to get. It's not going to be done before my classes start, so... But it'll at least be to a level of completion that's going to make it, work on.
I was wondering
Yeah, probably sooner than later, actually. maybe next week.
I'm a cat now.
It's and I mean, I'm working on that like into the night. So, I mean, I haven't been doing a heck of a whole lot of other stuff. I mean, usually while I'm working on it, Abby's playing, I don't know how many endings there are to Control, but she
she's still playing a lot of Control. I was kind of surprised.
She got to one of those endings.
Okay, good.
But that's why she's been playing, is because I've been working. So.
Well, yeah, there's some DLCs too.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention this time because I keep forgetting to mention that every Thursday after this, for a while now, we've been playing Darkwell. And the last session is tonight, but I've been playing a clairvoyant named Charlie. That's been fun. I've never played any kind of psychic before.
And it's also based on Cortex Prime, right?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's a different system?
I mean, maybe it is. I don't.
Well, I mean, what you played, the sci-fi game you played before was Cortex Prime. Is this the same dice mechanic?
No.
Okay, then it's different. Okay.
He's developed this special drawing. You know, you draw tokens of a kind with it. It's really actually pretty cool, and it works great with the way the game is kind of supposed to mean.
He's been fashioning it for literally decades, so, and it's gone through a bunch of different systems. So,
you know, Dave's really great at figuring out ways to make the mechanic enhance the mood or the general motif, I guess, of the game itself. Like the game he was developing where you use tarot cards as the mechanic or whatever, because it was it was supposed to be that kind of a 19th century penny dreadful kind of thing. And it was really creative and it was really fun. This is a similar kind of thing. But this game is built around conspiracies and sort of a...
That's just what he wants you to think.
But it's been very fun. And I play a clairvoyant. And that's been an interesting thing to sort of... Because I don't really even tell stories.
You've never been clairvoyant?
I don't even really tell very many stories with like psychic people. Like even my novels, even though one way of interpreting the story is for there to be supernatural things going on, there's not a lot of
psychics.
Well, the POV characters aren't, right? The psychic stuff is supposed to be going on around them, and so they're not really experiencing it. Or, you know, I haven't done very many stories where one of the main characters that you're supposed to sort of be experiencing the story through has powers. I've rarely done that. So, you know, playing a clairvoyant was kind of an interesting new experience. I didn't think that it would be a big deal, but, you know, once I started, I realized this is really kind of different for me to build a character like this. So it's been kind of fun. And the game's really interesting. I mean, I think it's a great thing that he's developed, and you know, I can't wait till he gets to a place where he can like, you know, publish it or whatever out there, because it's pretty cool.
It is his masterpiece.
What about you? How was your week?
Pretty okay. I had my anniversary.
Oh yeah. How'd that go?
Real mixed. Dinner was marvelous. And we were there a long time. They gave us this table that's sort of separate. It's a little table for two that's sort of separate from everything, which we didn't ask for, but they've given it to us before. We've celebrated anniversaries at that table before. But so we were there a long time, and near the end it's kind of emptying out, and this young couple came in and were sitting way down the way from us, and Trish is watching them. She's like, they are so cute, because they were very young, but like very into each other, and like they were both kind of leaned forward and they were talking, and they were very clearly like really, and it was just a fun sort of reminiscent. Trish was like, we should go tell them, like, we're celebrating our 17th wedding anniversary and we think you're adorable, but like we decided that was kind of weird or whatever. But on the way out, I went to the hostess station. I was like, so we're here celebrating our 17th anniversary. And we saw that couple come in and we thought they were really cute. And it reminded us of us in our younger years. Is there a way we can, I can like give you my card. You can just pay for their meal when they're done with it. And she was like, sure. That's nice. We did that. Yeah. And it was cool. And she's like, you should write a note. I'm like, I don't know what to say. So she said, I'll tell them. So yeah, just left and did that. So that was fun. And yeah, the meal was great. Being downtown was terrifying. Having nothing to do with COVID. It was very crowded and I'm just not used to that. And I've still been sort of trying to parse it. It's not COVID. I have perhaps unwise amounts of belief in the vaccine. But it's just from a social perspective, like there were so many people that I had to keep in my brain, like that I had to be aware of. Not that I had to watch or anything, but like I had an awareness of like there's people here and there were so many of them and it just really freaked me out.
Welcome to my world,
right?
This is what it's like for me my whole life.
And hopefully I'll get, well, yeah, because that's also why COVID didn't change a lot for you, because you're hanging out by yourself anyway.
Yep, same thing.
I'm hoping to readjust. But also had one of the most humiliating experiences I think I've ever had.
Oh, no.
Little thing called parking in downtown Iowa City on a Saturday night.
Okay.
Normally, this is the thing. Normally, in a non-pandemic time, Trish and I would not be downtown on a Saturday night when the weather is good, because it's crazy.
Yeah.
Full of crazy people, mostly young, mostly drunk. But so Trish and I drop her off at the restaurant and I go to look for a parking spot, which is very difficult. So I go around and I'd seen one on the way that I hadn't taken because it was far enough away that I was like, nah, we can do better. But eventually I was like, I cannot do better. So I head back down in that way and get there just in time to see somebody pull into that spot. So I was like, fuck. Then I'm driving around some more and I drive one and there's people going to get in their car in a spot. The problem is somebody pulled up. They were like a delivery driver or whatever. And they were right in front of that car. And I'm like, there's a lot of traffic here. I'm not going to stop in the street waiting for the delivery driver to wait for it was too much. So I just kept going. And then much later, still going around, I'm coming the other direction and that spot is still open. And I'm like, holy shit, I'll get that spot. And so I'm pulling along. But of course, as I'm pulling along, a car is pulling up and I'm like, okay, they might want the spot. I'll let them have the spot. But I'll see. If they don't want it, they'll keep going. And they go past. So I'm like, cool. So I've wrenched the steering wheel around to get that spot. And as I'm turning around, they clearly had just gone past so that they could back in, like you're supposed to do. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, my bad. I'll get out of here. But I didn't ever see their face, but clearly they were like, oh, this asshole, because they just drove off. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God. Meanwhile, there's people. There's a lot of people. There's outdoor seating for a couple of restaurants, like right there. And they are all giving me side eye and like super legitimately. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to let it go to waste. I'm going to get it. I'm like, when I get out, I'll be like, I feel like such an asshole. I didn't even think about it. God, it's so bad. And I'll just tell people and then we'll all laugh about it and I'll move on. Except I am shit at parallel parking. And so what happens is me wrenching the wheel around. And then, oh, we got to move again. Oh, no, dude. Oh, got to move again. Oh, no, dude. Meanwhile, my ass is sticking out in the street. So cars are trying to, like, get around me. Some cars are having to wait. But the people sitting there are trying not nearly effective enough to hide that they're, like, laughing at me and shaking their head and shit. And eventually, I'm just, like, so fucking embarrassed. I was like, screw it. And I drove off. So I didn't even take the spot that I stole. And I immediately went to the nearest like multi-story parking structure, even though it's a way longer walk and it'll cost me money. Cause I was like, I just want to be inside where people can't see me. And I'm just like, it's so bad because it was terrible. And it was 100% me. Like no one else Like, everybody's response was entirely appropriate to my asshole. So yeah, that was fun.
Sorry.
But dinner was great. And we finally got to have supper with the neighbors. And that was cool. Like, just shit where, like, me and the young one are talking video game stuff and we're just sitting next to each other on the couch. I haven't been able to do that in ages. Got to see their house. Got to see the new setup they had in there. They've done some remodeling and stuff, and that was cool. So that was really nice. Still playing a lot of Genshin Impact. I finished up that the first summary draft for Odd Wings. I'm working on the second one. So hopefully just within a week or two here, I'll actually start getting out some queries.
Good.
We watched some more Shadow and Bone. Don't hate it so far. Irregulars has been canceled.
Oh, really?
Yes, which was very surprising. But I'm also kind of happy because, I'm like I said, it's fairly self-contained. Like, that was a decent stopping point, so that works okay. Also, I've known for a long time, Leverage is getting like a reboot, like a sequel series.
Oh, really?
Yes, involving all the actors except Timothy Hutton. And I had known about it a long time ago, and it's going to be on IMDb TV. And so I was like, no, I'm happy with how Leverage ended, and I don't want to subscribe to another streaming service, whatever. So then this week, the first trailer for it dropped. Damned if I'm not going to watch that. Jesus Christ. But to be fair, apparently IMDb TV doesn't cost, so it won't be more money at least. But oh, looks good. I'm very happy. And we watched a movie last night.
What is it?
It's on Hulu. It's called Save Yourselves. It is a sci-fi, I guess, comedy that we had heard about before. And then we finally had seen a trailer again, and we were like, oh yeah, we should watch that. And so we watched that. It is a weird movie. It is a very imperfect movie, but I think I recommend it if it's for free. If you have Hulu, watch it. It's good. It's fine. And it's kind of original. So a young couple who live in Brooklyn become increasingly frustrated with their sort of meaningless lives and addiction to being online all the time. So given an opportunity, they decide to go stay in this cabin out in the woods upstate for a week, and with no, cut off all online stuff. Like, they only take their phones and they turn their phones off after leaving a voicemail, so everybody knows they're not checking email, they don't have their computers, none of that for a week. While they are there, aliens invade the planet and hijinks ensue. And it's fun. Yeah. Joe Firestone's in it for like 30 seconds, but she's in it. There's a bunch of people in this movie, which is weird because there's basically two people in this movie. And it was weird also because I didn't know either of the main actors, but I felt like I knew every other actor. Like, Amy Sedaris is in this movie in that they get a voicemail from a character voiced by her one time. It's very weird. But yeah, it's fun. It has some issues, but in general, it was kind of original. It was kind of fun. I don't know. I think it's worth your time. It's not worth extra money. Don't pay for it, but it's worth your time. So you could check that out. Did I talk about the ex-girlfriend of mine that I found out is a Nebula Award-winning author?
Yes.
All right. Well, I finished her novella. I believe called Her Silhouette Drawn in Water. The author's named Vilar Kaftan, V-Y-L-A-R Kaftan, K-A-F-T-A-N. Anybody who wants to look her up can check her out. It's her only non-short story at this point. It was good. Like, I was impressed. I mean, it makes sense if she's winning awards and shit, but it was good. Very, very sort of compelling and mysterious, but lyrical and focused at the same time. It's a woman who is trapped on a prison planet underground with just her and this one other woman because they are telepaths and they destroyed an entire spaceship worth of innocent people, and so now they're imprisoned here. But the problem is our protagonist doesn't remember this. Something involving the chip they put into her to tamp down her telepathic powers like screwed up her memory, so she doesn't remember any of this. And then, like, there's signs that shit may not be the way it looks like it is. But yeah, it's very good. So I would very much recommend it. And if you go to Vi's actual website, she has it DRM free on like every different type of platform you could want it. So I stupidly just went to Amazon, but you can like go there and buy the Kindle version and stick it on your device or wherever you want it. So, but I would recommend that. Yeah, that was very interesting to read. So now I'm reading the second Wayfarer's book, the sequel to A Long Trip to a Small Angry Planet. I forget what this one is called. Also very good. I really should remember these authors' names off the bat so I can tell y'all, because it's good stuff. Maybe I'll put it in the blog. I'm really good. Now that I got over that hump of that really dull Discworld book, I'm getting back into the groove of reading, and I'm very happy about that. I'm also listening to the most recent Dresden Files, because my current exercise regime is I'm walking every morning. While Trish gets ready for work, I go take a long walk. And so I'm listening to the audiobook then. So that's moving along briskly. And it is funny because these last two books came out within 6 months of each other, and they take place within like an hour of each other. Mm-hmm. Like one book ends and the next one takes up immediately. And yet the book before this one, I very much did not like, but I'm really liking this one. So that's a little strange, but there you go. All the same. I think that's pretty much my entire life for the last week.
Okay.
Sounds about right. All right. Should we draw a thing?
Let's draw a thing.
It's a thing. I've drawn it. This is from Craig. I'm quoting here, just so we all know. If we ignore the shit show that was 2020, how do you think the decade will be remembered? Craig. Craig, I think the decade will be remembered by the shit show that was 2020.
Like the whole decade of the 20s, he means, or the whole before that, the teens? Which decade does he
mean? If he means the 2020s, that's a terrible question.
I guess so, because like how could we possibly know? There's almost the whole decade to go.
Neither of us is actually clairvoyant or precognitive or anything like that. So let's go with he means, I mean, and you make a good point, because it's like the teens and then the 20s. But although this actually works if we're going to ignore the shit show that was 2020. So yeah, let's talk 10 to 19.
Okay. Yeah.
It's still pretty bad.
Well, I think it's gonna be tough because the last part of it there is, I think for many years it's going to be seen as uniquely bad. I'm not sure that after 100 years with a broader historical perspective it'll look, you know, quite so bad as it looks to us. But I think for a long time it's going to look uniquely bad. But before that, I'm not sure, say Obama's presidency, for example, I'm not so sure history's going to be as kind to it as people are now, but I don't think he's ever going to be seen as like some terrible president or whatever. And
he's always going to be seen as a little bit better because he's fucking right next to Trump. Right. Like, that's always going to help.
The first black president. And also, you know, I think that he had a lot of natural talents that really contributed to him, first of all, getting into office and getting a second term. I mean, I think there's just always going to be a lot to say about Obama, even though I think, again, history will be critical of some things. He's not going to be like in the bottom 20 presidents or something like that. I mean, you know, so his presidency, I think, is probably always going to be starkly contrasted with Trump's. So it's the decade's going to be, I think, always seen as a really weird thing. And if they ever understand it, like, you know, as history, you know, proceeds, if they ever can look back on it and get a solid analysis of it, I think it's whatever they say about it, it's going to be some kind, and I don't yet know what that's going to be exactly, but I think it's going to be some kind of, well, society swung this direction for a little bit, and then the reaction was to swing, you know, in response.
Like, as is always the case.
Yeah, I think it's going to be characterized as a pendulum swing decade. Now, what that pendulum is going to be defined as, or what that spectrum, I guess I still don't even feel confident that I know, but I think history will remember it as a decade that swung one direction and then another. And I'm not even saying that's accurate. I mean, but I think that's a way that historians often cope with decades that go like that, where it seems to be really different at the front end than the back end. They just almost always characterize it as, well, the huge difference on the back end was a response, or like almost a reaction to the front end kind of thing.
Yes.
Whether that's accurate or not.
And people should be aware, William is not saying that is how historians will look at it. He's saying that that is a possibility, because sometimes that happens in times when historians talk about things. And he's not saying that historians will talk about this decade, but often they talk about decades. And so this could definitely be a decade about which they talk. I didn't think you had enough caveats.
Shut up.
So I just want to make sure everybody knows. He's also not saying that he said any of what he just said, but if he was going to say things, they could be along the lines of what he's saying.
Speculating about the future is hard. Okay.
No, this is one of the things I most love about you. It is hilarious. And I love it.
What? I don't know.
Someday I'm going to ask you if it's raining outside, and then I'm just going to kick back for 30 minutes and listen to you go on.
You don't find speculation a tricky thing to do?
I would find accurate speculation a tricky thing to do, but we're on a podcast. We freely have no credentials, and there's like 6 people listening. I mean, I'm calling it right now. I think people are going to look out back on this decade and accidentally think Obama was actually Godzilla, and they're really going to be confused about how this giant 8-story black man like stomped on Tokyo. It's going to be crazy. Yeah, I don't give a shit.
That reminds me of my favorite Obama joke when he was running for president. What was it? People in some state were calling the cops because because of a black man asking for change or something like that. It was really funny. I just messed it up, but it was hilarious.
My favorite joke is, to this day, anything that happens, we say, thanks, Obama. Good or bad. We just say that with the same disdain in our voice. Like, even if, like, you know, our rental car got upgraded, we're like, Thanks, Obama. I have been developing this theory based on nothing, probably wrong. Sorry, I'm trying to play the game the way William does. So I've invented this bullshit theory. That, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects of social cycles and swinging back and forth, and the sort of right left thing is part of it. But I've noticed a different one going back at least as far as the 60s, which are, you have a decade where America thinks it knows what the fuck it's doing. And to a larger degree, Western society thinks it knows what the fuck it's doing. And then a decade where everybody's like, what the fuck were we doing? That was terrible. We need to shake shit up and change it. Yeah. And then the next decade, we think the last decade shook things up enough and we know what we're doing now, and we do it. And then the decade after that, we're like, oh no. And then so on. And here's the order. The 60s, we felt like we knew what we were doing. The late 60s got a little weird, but it basically broke into the 70s where everybody was like, no, new ideas, expression, everything's fucked up now. We got to do it better and different. And your dad's way sucked. And da, 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 da. And that's all good. So then in the 80s, we were all just fucking partying. And everybody knew it was happening. And greed is good. And everybody's doing coke. And we're all wearing the most outrageous outfits. And everything was awesome. And then the 90s, where people were like, you know what? We're pretty... It's weird that we never talk about any things like racism or sexism or shit like that. We need to work on that. Also, the environment. The environment's way better, worse than we've been talking, people. We need to get on that shit. And so we were all about that in the 90s. And then in the 2000s, everybody's like, yeah, we nailed it. We're good now. We can do whatever. We're happy. And then in the 2010s, people were like, no, this is fucked up. And this time, and we had Me Too, and we had riots, and we had all sorts of things, because we're like, no, the 2000s was bullshit. I remember in the 90s talking about how the 80s was bullshit. And then I remember in the 2010s talking about how the 2000s were bullshit. And a lot of it has to do with social justice, but some of it had to do with environmental pressures and things like that as well. And so I think we have just come out of a very strong, aggressive attempt at transformation in this last decade, especially so many people fighting against Trump. And now we're still at odds and things, but I feel like so many of us have dropped down from DEFCON 1 now that that asshole is not in the office anymore. And I really think this is going to lead us into a decade where we feel like we know what the fuck we're doing. And then the next decade after that, by then I'll probably be too old to know what's going on, but the young people, the following decade, will be like, this is fucked up. The 20s were awful. We did this horribly. We need to be better.
I find that whole thing you just said interesting, but I wonder, I mean, how did 9/11 fit into that? Because it seemed like 9/11 also brought with it this idea that, what have we been doing? I mean, how, you know, I mean, I realize a lot of people responded by saying, well, we, you know, this wasn't the chickens coming home to roost. We didn't do anything to deserve this. But a lot of people thought different. A lot of people were shocked by it in a way where they thought, wow, is our foreign policy so messed up that we're like making people hate us like this?
Yes, a lot of people thought of that. And socially speaking, on a broad scale, nothing along those lines happened.
Yeah, that's true. I think
at all. That's the thing. This is a very loose concept, because everybody always thinks, look back, every decade has people saying, this is fucking racist. This is fucking sexist.
Right, this is
fucking killing the planet.
Right.
I mean, it's really weird to see environmental messages back in like the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have these same talking points, but they were already talking about this shit back then. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. As a society, we have short memories because we don't like it. We don't like the bad stuff, but we feel responsible. So we pay attention and we work at it for a little while until we're sure we are always there for an awareness campaign. And so that's what the 2010s were, was a huge awareness campaign. We are fucking racist, and here is why. And we are pissed about it. We are fucking sexist. Here is why. We are pissed about it. the planet is going to die. It is straight up going to die if we do not do something immediately. This is all horrible. Okay. Good. Now back to your regularly scheduled lives.
Yeah, that's
how I see it. That's how the 70s going into the 80s were. That's how the 90s going into the 2000s were, in my opinion. And I think that's how this is going to be. So yeah, that's my prediction. So thank you for an incredibly depressing question there, Craig. Made us sad. Also, this decade we're going into now is going to be remembered as the one where Scotland fucking left the UK. And that'll be interesting. So good luck with that.
I have no idea what the 20s are going to be like. I mean, I just have no idea. I don't know what Biden's, I couldn't even guess what Biden's presidency is going to be like.
Neither could he, or
what the fallout's going to be from some of the policies that are coming. It's just almost impossible. Except applying rules like you just were, which I think is sensible. I mean, I do think everything you just said sounds reasonable and as a suitable way to sort of
not bad for just pulling it out of my butt.
Yeah, not bad. You know, you could kind of guess based on that, but even then, that's just guessing sort of a general trend. How it actually looks like, you know what I mean, like. How it's actually going to manifest itself is, like, for me, it's just impossible. I can't even.
And as much as things are cyclical, there's always new components.
Yeah, yeah.
Telecommunications has changed every decade forever. It's really doing now. It's funny, and this is a bit of a digression, and it is a first world situation. But so Trish and I were talking about cruises. Not because we plan to go on one anytime soon. But because, you know, in the next couple of years, we did enjoy them and they will make a comeback. And that's part of the thing is she's been reading and like they're starting up again. And we're like, yeah, not yet. Thank you. But so she was reading up. And in the process, it was interesting because it has been like a decade since we went on a cruise. And so she's been reading. She's like, I think some of the culture has changed and here's various things that changed. And one of the big ones is Wi-Fi. On most cruise ships, for a fee, and sometimes not for a fee, you can just get Wi-Fi on the ship, same as you could on land. And that was decidedly not a thing you could do when we were on cruise ships. And something that we kind of enjoyed, because we really were sort of cut off from the world, and we liked that. And we're talking about this, and Trish is like, I just don't see why people would want to go on cruises and still do that. And I said, because there are people old enough to be buying cruises and going on them that have never lived without Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be terrifying. That would be horrible. Their life is built into it. We remember a time before, so it's not like traumatic or anything. We know how to do it. And she's like, that is a good point. She says, also, we're not that much better because I was thinking I didn't want to because I wanted to not have contact and everything. But then the article I was reading talked about streaming stuff. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, I want to be able to stream stuff while I'm on the cruise. So it seeps in. I think that's a huge one. Obviously, as the environmental crisis gets worse, that's a huge one. The big one I have now is thanks to the Trump presidency. The Trump presidency, what I think is going to be the biggest long-ranging effect of the Trump presidency is it validated racism. There are a whole bunch of people out there who have been racist quietly and thought that that was not okay and they have to keep it to themselves or in their little communities. And now they have been taught that, no, you can even be president with those views. And that's why even though he's gone now, you still have people. And some of it is shootings. Some of it is bullshit in the houses of Congress and in the state legislatures, but a whole bunch of people who had some really shitty views are now emboldened to think that those are perfectly valid and that we can express them, and that it is a question, that there's now a question of whether or not racism is bad, basically. And it's got both sides mobilizing on the subject, and it sucks. And I don't see it disappearing. I mean, Biden's not going to make that disappear. So yeah, that's going to suck. And that'll be different. That may stay off the sense of equilibrium that we all wished we had. But
I must be looking at the wrong news sources, because I haven't really seen that. I mean, I've seen you know, conversations about race in America and things, but not, I haven't seen portrayed quite that way.
Basically, every day I see a story of cops doing something horrible to people of color for no reason. And at least at once a week, somebody from a state legislature says something horrifically racist and or sexist. All the time.
Well, I mean, I hear about, I mean, maybe it's just how I, like, when I hear about police, I mean, policing has been a problem in America for a long time. So,
yeah,
I mean, I don't really, I guess, you know, I guess that doesn't seem like I'm hearing that more than I used to. But the thing you said about legislators saying racist things,
today it was a Colorado legislator telling a fellow colleague, calling them buckwheat on the open floor.
What? Oh my gosh.
There's also a big one with people being mad at Liz Cheney for voting for the impeachment by making a comparison of the girl next door and their girlfriend betraying them or something, which that's fun too. Yeah, no, there's all sorts of bullshit now.
Well, maybe this, I mean, you know, I have really, especially as I'm going to be starting classes pretty soon, I've really tried to, I mean, I might not be able to keep, I mean, I've barely been able to keep up on news the way it is, but I might, that might be a thing that I have to stop keeping up on so much because of all the other stuff I have to do.
And you may find it's wonderful for your mental health.
Well, I might, but I mean, it's, I don't like being uninformed about politics because, you know, I'm one of those people who does believe that it's our government. It's our job. You know, it's not their job, it's ours. And that means being vigilant and paying attention and knowing, you know, what's going on. So I do feel a little like I'm not doing my part if I don't keep up on things.
That was true last decade, but this decade, stay in the course.
But if I don't have the bandwidth for it, I mean, that's just how it is. You know, I'm older, I'm trying to go back to school. I can't, there's only so much any person can do, and I have to know my limitations and I have to make my priorities. And, you know, being a good citizen is a high priority for me usually, but, you know, my family comes first, my household comes first and things, and everything I'm doing is, you know, is about me being a productive participant in just in my own family. So, I mean, I can't make that a second priority. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But it's too bad that we live at a time when it's so hard and it takes so much energy and resources just to be informed enough or to feel like you're informed enough to make a decent decision when you vote or, you know, when you.
Yeah, but it comes out of having the power to be that informed. There was a time when you could be as informed as you could be, and it wouldn't take nearly as much effort because you couldn't be that informed.
Well, I suppose.
Nowadays, we know everything. I mean, go back a decade or two. How the fuck would I know what some Colorado legislature said on the floor? Like, how would that have gotten to me? Well, you know, right. But it doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means that I wouldn't have known about it.
But someone in Colorado probably knew. I mean, what do you, I mean,
aside, maybe.
What do you really need to know? I mean, I get how this, why this news piece is important. But in a more general sense, what do any of us need to know about what's going on in Colorado besides the people in Colorado? I mean, they need to know.
Well, and people want to know if there are systemic issues.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and like, again,
there's just important. More yeah. access to information. So the scale on what is well-informed has changed.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that in the past, it wouldn't have been just as important to know all that stuff. It just literally would have been impossible to know all that stuff. And also, we didn't know all that stuff was there to know.
Right. But I mean, for me, my feeling about it, and other people, I'm sure, can, you know, feel differently about it, and that's fine. But my personal feeling is it's harder to find reliable sources of information. Like, there's so many sources of information I used to use that I don't feel like are reliable anymore. I don't feel like they tell me the truth or even enough of the truth that I can just pay attention to them. I mean, I've had to totally shift where I get information, and there probably isn't a single source of information I currently use that I feel like I don't have to totally filter through some kind of a,
the increase in information has become an increase in the knowledge and desire to manipulate said information.
Yeah,
like,
I see that.
As our knowledge sources get bigger, so do our spin resources.
Why is that, do you think? Is that like a competition thing? Like, well, we have to offer something that's like sensational to get people to pay attention to us instead? Or
I think it's one of those things that's always been there. People have always spun their stories certain ways. And as information has become more ubiquitous, it's become easier to find the right sources. And here's the thing. You work harder to try and find real sources. Most people find a news source that sounds good to them and assume that one's true. And it used to be less of a thing because there used to be less ability to manipulate. But nowadays, that's back in the day, there were two opinions on a thing that happened in the news.
Seemed like.
And you had to pick which one you want. Nowadays, there's a billion of them. And we all know some of them are bullshit. And so it's even easier to be like, here's mine. Also, this one is bullshit. You know how there's fake news. Everyone in the world agrees that fake news is a thing. People vehemently disagree as to which of those newses are fake.
Which of those newses?
Which of those newses is fake? Which of those newses be fake? And the guy who coined the term did it in the most disingenuous way possible from jump.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this happens. As with more power becomes more responsibility, and we as people do not become more responsible.
It's a mess. It's a big mess, buddy.
Also, I don't know if I've ever been explicit about this, but I mean, communism, capitalism, all that aside, ethically speaking, there should never be billionaires. And I don't mean we shouldn't live in a society where it's not possible. I mean, if you hit the point in your life where you have a net worth of $1 billion, you should be getting rid of that money and doing good with it faster than you make it. Because I understand selfishness. I understand wanting to have everything I want at the drop of a hat, be able to go around and do whatever I want. Your ability to do that happens way before you hit $1 billion. And once you've hit the point that you can do anything you want for the rest of your life and buy anything you want for the rest of your life, there's no reason to hold on to the rest of that money.
Well, I mean, you know my view, which is that any organization that surpasses a particular scale starts to get corrupt. It can't not be corrupt. But I apply that to everything, to government and to business. But
Jeff Bezos had a contentious divorce. How is that possible? She could have taken 90% of everything he owned, and he would be still be so rich that it would be literally impossible for him to spend all of his money in his lifetime. And that's if she took 90%. Like, it's insane. Why? You don't, nobody has a use for $1 billion. Like, I can be as selfish as the next person, but at the point that I'm up into like eight figures, I'm covered. I could do whatever the fuck I want. I could vacation year round at the most expensive places in the world. I could hobnob with the rich and famous like you would not fucking believe. I could buy a different car for every day of the week. I could make the most ridiculously giant, horrible house. I could do a statistically significant bit of damage on climate change in a bad way. Like, I could ruin the earth enough that people would notice me specifically ruining it. And I wouldn't need $1 billion to do it. So,
okay.
What I'm saying is, no matter what, this has been a thing that's bugging me lately. No matter what side of the political spectrum they are on, a person who is and maintains $1 billion or more is inherently, like, sociopathically selfish. Like, is really fucked up as a person. Like, that is horrible to me. Apparently there's only like 2,000 something of them in the world, but they're huge. Also, because of Jeff Bezos's divorce, we live in a world where we have a billionaire whose name is Mackenzie, and I can't even cope with that. It's terrible. Mackenzie was a snot-nosed kid in my elementary school. I mean, Mackenzies don't get billions of dollars. It's not right. But yeah, I'm pissed at billionaires lately. So,
okay. I don't.
Billionaires suck. Just saying.
I don't really have a problem one way or the other with billionaires.
And that's why, well, actually in this decade, that's fine. But next decade, I'm going to call you out hard.
Why?
Because next decade is when we worry about it. Yeah. This decade, we've solved all our problems and we're just going to coast. Did you not hear my whole thing?
Yeah. I don't, you know, like you were saying, someone has a net worth of $1 billion. Well, that doesn't mean they've got their mattress stuffed full of $1 billion. I mean, I don't know what even the logistics of having a net worth of $1 billion or $10 billion even means.
Yes, like, but it is so high an order of magnitude above what amount of money and resource you need that I'm willing to say that covers the margin of liquidity issues.
Yeah, sure. But like, what is the liquidity? Like, how much could they reasonably give away? I mean, because like Bezos, for example, if his net worth is like, say, 100 billion or something, let's say, just for the sake of argument.
I think it's 200 and something billion, but yes.
Okay, but that's related to his business, which that means it doesn't really all, you know, belong to him. So it's like, how does that all, I don't know how all that works. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's all his and he can do whatever he wants with it. But I don't know.
Well, if that's how- as long as 0.5% is some that he can do something with, my argument still stands.
Well, then what is he, but maybe he does do something with it. I don't know. I've never looked at his books. Maybe he gives a lot of money to charity. I have no idea.
Not enough that his net worth drops. Not enough that his net worth drops. His net worth keeps getting exponentially bigger.
Well, I don't know. I mean, everyone keeps using Amazon. So, I mean,
yeah,
it seems like that's going to happen no matter what he does.
He is a very shrewd businessman. That's not the same thing as not being an asshole.
I don't know. I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying for me to assume such an extreme thing about a person, that they'd have to be more than just rich. I mean, I don't understand all of the ins and outs of what even all that means. Maybe if I did understand it, I would agree with you, but I don't think I do. I don't think I understand.
I definitely don't. And I am highly confident It's not something that could dispute what I'm saying.
Maybe.
It could, I mean, it could argue that it is more complicated, but not to the degree that it can dispute what I'm saying, because we're talking about such an extreme situation that, like, I have to not understand how money works for it to not. I mean, I'm not saying millionaires. There are plenty of people who have probably way more money than they'll ever need that I'm fine with. I'm saying a billion is the point that is so extreme. Like, there are probably a lot of people with less than $1 billion who are also shitty in exactly the way I'm talking about. What I'm saying is a billion is such an insanely high number that I'm confident in making it my cutoff point, where I am confident in saying there is no way to excuse that. Either you're being weirdly hoarding about it, or if the circumstances is complicated enough that that's not the case, then I think calling them a billionaire is an inaccurate statement.
Maybe it is.
Because billionaire is such an extreme edge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you can, I think there are some things you can say that do not reflect well on people like Bezos. For example, when you see, you know, when you see how much profit there is, even if you look at like margins and things, it seems like,
oh yeah, Amazon's like a satanic company, but that's a whole separate issue.
It seems, oh, okay, well, never mind then.
I mean,
I was just going to say things like, it seems like you could pay people more. It seems like you could cover more.
100%. 100%.
I mean, you can definitely say those
things. It's awful. It's awful. But also, he's technically not CEO anymore. He stepped down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, again, evil corporations is a whole additional issue. I'm talking about individuals with $1 billion or more. It's ridiculous. It's inhuman.
Inhuman.
It is inhuman to keep that much money that can, by definition, serve you no purpose.
Yeah, well, I don't know what keep it means, but because I'm sure it's not kept. I'm sure it does something to somewhere, gets invested.
Usually earns them more money, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing about, well, you know, people who make more money not by producing anything or hiring people to produce things, but just by, oh, I'm going to give a rich person, I'm going to give that rich person money, and then that's going to make me more money. There's a lot of money being made just kind of up there.
Yeah. And it's all a very complicated and relative thing.
Yeah.
Such that I'm only willing to say this about the incredibly extreme case of billionaires. I am absolutely confident that it's not too complicated when you're up at that much. And I'll tell you another thing that adds to it. It is highly unusual and incredibly newsworthy when someone becomes a billionaire and then later stops being a billionaire. Because it very seldom happens. Oh. Very seldom. And that, I think, says a whole bunch right there. But anyway, billionaires suck. William is correct that he doesn't know what he's talking about, but I'm right. So that's your takeaway here. And write in and tell, actually, go to the blog. I feel like this is a worthwhile conversation until people prove that I'm right. Go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com. Also, if you know the shit that William clearly doesn't know that would possibly complicate my argument, tell me. I would be eager to know if I have it wrong. I just am very confident I do not. But I would, and unfortunately, William's only argument is, I don't know, which is a valid argument, but not a good one in an argument.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you know, tell me, because I would if I'm wrong, I definitely want to know I'm wrong. So tell me. But I'm pretty confident at the billion-dollar level, assholes. Write in themagicaltalkinghat at gmail.com with questions. And, you know, ask us how we feel about other levels of wealth. How do I feel about thousandaires? I have very strong feelings about thousandaires, but I'm going to save them for when somebody writes in. Not as strong of feelings about hundredaires. Very strong feelings about tensers, as I call them. People who have tens of dollars. Incredibly strong feelings. I feel very strongly about that.
I mean, it's pretty easy to know people in Iowa who have a net worth in the millions who are not, like, their lifestyle isn't. I mean, farmers, for example, who own a lot of land and equipment. Yeah, their net worth is going to be fairly high, but they don't have a lot of, that doesn't mean they have a ton of disposable income and are living high on the hog and whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just the nature of their world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you're saying, so I don't know.
When you multiply that by 1,000.
Yeah. It seems like it would be different. I agree.
If you took a successful farmer and gave them 1,000 times as much disposable income as they currently have, they would have more money than they would ever need.
If it's disposable income, of course.
What we're saying is farmers, for example, are a particularly serious version of where your net worth and your available income are drastically different. And what I'm saying is, even in that extreme circumstance, and farmers are one of the worst for that, if you multiplied it by 1,000, which is what we're talking about here, they would have a shit ton of money.
Well, except if you multiplied it by 1,000 in the same way, like, well, they have more land and equipment. It would just be the same
as
situation.
As long as the ratios are the same, though. I'm talking about that sliver that they have that they actually get as a living. You multiply by 1,000, because simultaneously, we're adding the huge chunk that they can't do anything with by 1,000, because we are making them billionaires. So as long as the ratio is the same, it's still a shit ton of money.
I mean, that's just math.
If we say, just for fun, let's say that 90% of what a farmer has is something they really can't do anything with. It has to stay there. And 10% is what they have. I'm saying if you multiply all that by 1,000, if it's still 10%, 10% of that larger number is a huge amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying there.
So unless you're saying if a millionaire farmer became a billionaire somehow, instead of 90% being stuff he couldn't touch, it became 99.999% of stuff he couldn't touch. In which case, I need to look into the details.
That's not what we're saying. Yeah. But that isn't what we're saying. You're scaling it in a very particular way. And I mean, that makes sense if you scale it like that.
And
it would have to be
a pretty extreme change, even if there's some change.
Right. Even if the margin is very narrow and stays the same, the raw number will be a lot bigger.
I am willing to concede that the validity of somebody being a millionaire is a much more complicated question. Even a multimillionaire because of the way the economy is and how they have their money and what that means. What I'm saying is, once you have achieved more than 1,000 times that, I don't think it can be complicated enough for them not to be horrible. So again, go to the blog and tell me I'm right. Or tell me I'm wrong, which I also would like. Or give your own thoughts. Or just go and make fun of William. I also love when people do that. It doesn't have to have anything to do with this. Make fun of him other ways. Make fun of the fact that he always wears hats. Speculate about what's under there. I've seen it. I'm not talking.
Just hair. Just hair. No.
You see the trailer for Sweet Tooth?
No, it's not like that. Yes, I've seen it.
What do you think?
doesn't do anything for me, but maybe it'll be all right.
It didn't do anything for me because I was like, oh, this is some sort of children's show about a deer boy. I don't care. But apparently, it's based on a very highly successful post-apocalyptic DC comic series.
Mm-hmm.
And as I delved into that a little bit more, I'm now kind of intrigued.
Okay, well, maybe it'll be all right.
It's DC Comics. You love everything DC Comics. That's like your deal.
Yeah, that's one of my deals.
You would marry Batman if you could.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, go back and listen to the podcast. The number of times you have mentioned you would marry Batman if you could. I mean, somebody do the work for me. Go back and find all the references. But so many times William has talked about how if he could marry Batman, he would in a heartbeat.
I can't think of
it. Ditch his wife immediately to marry Batman.
I can't think of anybody in DC I'd marry.
So many times he's talked about marrying Batman. Specifically Bruce Wayne, not like Batman Beyond or any of the Robins. I don't think you might marry Nightwing, but I feel like you'd more have a fling with Nightwing than Mary. This could be like a fuck, marry, kill thing with like Nightwing and Batman. Anyway, so yeah, go find that and listen again next week because this is quality shit here, you know? Also, once again, I am a cat.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.